Coming up, a conversation with Lauren Nelson, Republican candidate for El Paso County Commissioner District 5 vacancy, on making democracy work.
This is Studio 809 Podcasts, informing, connecting, and empowering the residents of the Pikes Peak region.
Welcome to Making Democracy Work. I'm your host, Shelley Roars, spokesperson for the League of Women Voters of the Pikes Peak region. Thank you for listening to Making Democracy Work and taking the time to learn more about being an active and engaged citizen. We are a nonpartisan grassroots organization focusing on voter education and outreach, good government, and citizen education. Today's conversation falls under voter education. We invited both of the candidates on the upcoming ballot for El Paso County Commissioner District 5 vacancy to be interviewed here on our podcast. And to avoid any bias or partisanship, our questions are similar for both candidates. So let's get to it. Lauren Nelson is running as a Republican for El Paso County Commissioner District 5. Welcome, Lauren, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So for our listeners, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us why you're running for this position?
Sure. Well, I appreciate the opportunity. First, I would like to say that I'm glad that you set this up so that people can be informed and have the education on the vote that they're going to be making coming up. And so thank you for this. And a little bit about myself. I was appointed in June, so I'm currently serving as the El Paso County Commissioner for District 5 after a resignation. And now there's this special vacancy election coming up in November that will determine who fulfills the role for the remainder of this term cycle. I am very passionate about the role of government, and that's sort of what has sparked my interest in serving in this capacity and wanting to make sure that we have good governance and policy setting in our community.
Thank you. So let's get right into those questions that I have. And the first one is kind of, you know, tell us, why should I vote for you instead of your opponent? What sets you apart from them?
Sure. So I believe the role of government is to respect private property and protect individual rights. And so those are the principles that I use when I'm making decisions. And I think that is what sets me apart, is I'm a very principled leader and I have experience in an elected capacity and have demonstrated that principal leadership as, you know, previously serving on the District 11 school board. And so I understand what good governance looks like and the importance of government staying in its lane and staying limited. And I think that that is something you will notice is sort of a difference in what you're hearing from me in respect to my opponent.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. So tell us about, tell our listeners, what are your highest priorities if elected?
I am really interested in making sure that we're using our taxpayer dollars appropriately. So I want to dig into the budget and make sure that we are prioritizing things such as public safety. And for example, the commissioners approved the budgets for the sheriff's office and the DA's office. And so making sure that we're resourcing those departments well, that public safety is a priority when it comes to our resources, and that we're using our taxpayer dollars to support that work, as well as I think infrastructure is a major priority. So roads, you know, I can't do much about the city's roads, but you're going to drive out of the city at some point into onto a county road. And so let's make sure that we're taking care of our infrastructure. And that's a major service that government should be providing to our community.
Okay. And when you say, actually, when, can I ask before that? Kind of, you said something about going out of the city. Your district is mainly smack in the middle of the city, right?
Yes. Which
is, okay.
So it makes it a little bit confusing.
Sure,
where your day-to-day roads of people driving in their neighborhoods will be overseen by city council and the mayor. But you still are an El Paso County citizen, and it's important that you have a voice and that you get to decide who you want to represent you. And because while it's a small group of people that are voting for each county commissioner or boundaried districted county commissioner, each commissioner makes decisions that impact the whole county. And so while I see it as, while it's a small group of people that will vote for me, comparatively to, you know, the population of the county is around 750,000 people, we still make decisions for the whole county. And so it's really important that you take the time to vote and be informed.
Yes, ma'am. So kind of going back to your highest priorities, name one of those. Just pick one issue that you would prioritize in your in the coming term. Tell us what it is and describe how you would want to accomplish that.
Honestly, it's a really high level of ensuring we're using taxpayer dollars appropriately. And so I'm a priority for me is making sure that when we are asking our citizens to pay their taxes, that money is spent in a way that is respectful and responsible in providing for our community well.
Okay. All right. So our next few questions come from tabs that are on the county commissioner's website of things that you guys are responsible for. A lot of the property and land, our services mm-hmm. and resources, roads, transportation. So that's kind of what we're going to focus on is each one of those tabs mm-hmm. and just have one question for each. So property and land. Okay. Yep. Carmen Line annexation, big special issue, right? Specifically for the county, right, that kind of have pushed that out. The city has kind of said, the voters have said, no, that is not going to happen here by overwhelming majority. So how will you ensure that large developers do not dictate growth in our county at the expense of existing residents, especially given our limited water supply?
This is a great question, and it's something I'm hearing quite a bit about as I'm speaking with voters and citizens. The principle I come back to is the importance of respecting private property rights. And so we need to make sure that government is not telling people what they can do with their land. Now, we also have to balance that with resources and, as you mentioned, water. And so we need to make sure we're growing responsibly. And the county has done a water study that will be coming out here in October. There'll be a work session, so tune in. I've been told it's October 21st. If that date changes, I apologize, but at the moment it's slated for October 21st. So if you want to learn more about our aquifers, because that's where the county's water comes from, as we're making land use decisions, it mostly anyone that's unincorporated will be accessing water through the aquifers. And so the county had a study performed so that we can get a sense of what's down there. We're talking hundreds of feet down. And so to make sure that we can make informed decisions as we're doing these land use considerations. And so, as I said, it's a balance of making sure that government isn't overstepping and telling people what they can do with their property. If a rancher wants to sell their land, they should be allowed to do so. And then if someone buys it that wants to put homes on it, because affordable housing is also something that we're finding in our community is a challenge. And you know, I want my children to be able to stay in Colorado Springs and my grandchildren if they want to. And so how do we make sure that we're providing affordable housing, and we are growing as a community because it's a wonderful place to live. I was born and raised here, and I feel so fortunate and blessed that I got to grow up in this community, and so I can understand why people want to move here. And so we just have to make sure we're doing so responsibly.
All right. Our next one is services and resources. Most on this tab is referrals to outside organizations, but what steps would you take to improve county services so residents don't feel like they're just being referred elsewhere in this instance, but instead receive direct, effective help locally?
I'm trying to think of a specific example where the county provides a service. We have done a lot of, and when I say we, I mean the county, have done a lot of work in this area of making sure that people are getting to the right staff members when they have a concern. So if it's a pothole, if it's a noise ordinance issue, we have on our website something called Citizen Connect, where you can log you know, a concern or an issue. And then we have staff that are monitoring that. And again, with my district, it is a little confusing that it mostly resides within city boundaries. So if you have a pothole on your street and you live within City of Colorado Springs limits, we are going to point you over to the Public Works Department at the city versus the county. But if you're within unincorporated El Paso County, then our Public Works Department would be notified of the concern, and then they will come in and address it for you. So I have an orientation this afternoon with our Department of Human Services, so I'm going to be learning more about how we operate in that realm. But yeah, I think another example would be the food stamps, or also known as SNAP benefits. And so we administer those at the county level. And so that's when we're, as the county, we have done a lot of work to make sure the right people that are really needing that benefit are receiving them, and ensuring we have a low error rate and that there aren't people taking advantage of the system and, you know, hindering the people who truly are in need from getting that. And so there is a lot of mindfulness around ensuring our services are reaching the people that really need it.
Okay. Next tab is roads and transportation. What's your plan for monitoring and improving our county's roads and transportation systems, right, that we got for those buses, particularly in rural and underserved areas?
So as the county board and commissioners, we serve on several boards and committees, and one that I am serving on is the Pikes Peak Rural Transportation Authority, and that was a ballot initiative that has come back a few times now to the voters, and it's every 10 years where taxpayers are asked to give additional funding towards roads. And this Pikes Peak Rural Transportation Authority is made up of different municipalities representatives, so city council, commission, other area municipalities, you know, Green Mountain Falls is just as an example, are also have decided to join and put it out to their voters of this additional funding. So that comes to the council, and we then review applications or recommendations from city engineering or county engineering on we would like to use this funding towards these specific projects. And so there is a lot of work into being forward thinking about the master plan when it comes to our transportation. There is always a report from our metro services, as you're saying, public transportation, and so how that's going. And when you threw in the rural community, that's what gave me pause, just thinking about how can I address that specifically. I think, you know, that's a big part of the county, falling on the county's shoulders, because our rural community members out in eastern El Paso County, you know, they're every bit as important as our, you know, more urban residents. And so we do want to balance and make sure they have access to good roads as they're out commuting and driving.
And just to link, PPRTA, mm-hmm. and that's the 2C, right, that I see the signs?
That's different.
So clarify 2C, for me.
2C is more about the curbs and gutters and ADA accessibility. You know, I would need to actually probably do a little bit more research before I came back and spoke as an expert on this topic, but PPRTA is a separate ballot initiative than 2C.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. So next tab, family, child, and adult services. How will you ensure that vulnerable children, families, and older adults receive timely and accessible support through county programs?
Yeah, I touched on this briefly before. This is so important. I definitely have a heart for kids, as you know, coming from serving on the school district school board, and kind of as I said, we want to make sure that those resources are getting to the people that are truly in need. And so I appreciate what the county has done with making sure our error rate is low and that we are really able to supply the individuals that are needing those resources. And I wish that my orientation were before this, because then I would be able to speak a little more knowledgeably in detail on specifics that the county services is offering. But, you know, when it comes to even services that I took a tour of the jail back in June, and helping the people that are there to be healthy. And so they have a program where if they're needing vaccinations, that they can start the process while there. And then once they're out in the community, if there's, you know, a second or third round that would be needed for their health, then they go out and administer that to continue that. And so helping to make sure our community overall is healthy. And that's something I'm still quite honestly wrapping my head around, of what is the role of government in public health and what should that look like? And I am currently serving now on the El Paso County Board of Health. And so just kind of taking a step back of, okay, taxpayer dollars is funding all of this. What should that look like if we're asking our citizens to fund these resources or these activities? You know, what is truly a taxpayer's responsibility versus, you know, what's something that should maybe be a nonprofit? And is it a wise use of taxpayer dollars to be working in this space? Or is that where we can partner with nonprofits and they come alongside and serve our community in that way? And it'd be individuals' choices where they're really passionate about a certain area and they can then donate and contribute in that space. And so that's something I'm still kind of wrestling with and figuring out as I'm learning more in the role, because I've only been here since June. So I'm learning a lot.
Yes, ma'am. All right. So next one is regarding safety and law. You've talked, touched a little bit about this in your priorities earlier. So how do you propose to strengthen public safety while also ensuring fairness, accountability, and community trust in law enforcement?
Yeah, I think it's so important that we support our law enforcement partners. I mentioned before, wise use of taxpayer dollars is a high priority for me, but public safety is also a priority. And so we need to make sure we're resourcing them well and recognize the incredibly difficult and stressful job that they have. I mean, when I toured the jail, talk about emotionally exhausting and just reality check of how hard that work is. And it's important that we hold people accountable to the choices that they've made. And then hopefully, you know, they will make different choices in the future. I also am serving as the liaison to the Community Corrections Board. And so helping to find people and make recommendations for individuals to serve on that board. And so that's when you have offenders that are in prison, they go through applications around 26 a week and review, okay, is this individual, would they be a candidate to go out to community corrections or ComCor? And so be, you know, out in the community and working under, you know, some guardrails, or is it that they need to remain in jail and or in prison? And just making sure we're balancing our community safety as well as recognizing the victims, that their own safety, that were previously offended by this individual. And so it's such an important job, and we have to balance all of it, of wanting people to make different choices, but also recognizing they could be a negative impact to our community if they aren't going to. And so you have to weigh those things.
All right. So that was all the tabs. The next one is about civic engagement and voting. Of course, we're about the league, right? We're about increasing voter turnout in every election. And usually this is a school board election, which this is a special vacancy that we have here. So usually school board is the second lowest voter turnout for elections for us. City council without a mayor on the ballot is our lowest, usually. So House Bill 25-13-19 has got this set up the way it is to where specifically for this district, only Republican voters and unaffiliated voters are allowed to vote. So do you agree with this House Bill 25-13-19? If so, why or why not?
So I think there's two questions here to answer. And this is the first time in Colorado history that this is taking place because this bill just passed in the legislature this past spring and the governor signed it in June. And I appreciate that it goes back to the voters, especially in this instance with the resignation happening with what would have been 18 months left of the term. I genuinely appreciate that it goes back to the voters to decide who will be serving the community for the remainder of that time, as it is quite a long period of time. Yes, it's more work with having to run in. If you consider the vacancy election that took place in June by a small group of people, it was made up of precinct leaders of within District 5. And so that ended up being around 40 people that made the decision.
Specifically Republican district leaders.
Correct.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
that is correct.
Good. Yep, correct. And so so if you count that election, that was like a little mini election. And then this now this special vacancy election in November. And then I do intend to run again next year on the general election, which would be getting onto the normal term cycle and then a primary in June. So that's four elections I'm going to be in the period of 18 months. That's a lot of work. So I think, yes, it's a little bit crazy. I'm signing up for that, but I'm really passionate about the role of government and wanting to serve our community in this space and seeing myself as a public servant and having a heart for service. And so I appreciate that it is going back to the voters. So I agree. I understand the reasoning for this new bill that went through. And then to your second question on whether it should be only Republican and unaffiliated voters that can vote in the special vacancy election. I think, as you mentioned, that in when you look at turnout, voter turnout and interest in elections and how sort of off-cycle elections have low voter turnout and that when I think about it in those terms, it makes sense to me that it should only be the Republican and unaffiliated voters that can vote in this special vacancy election because the person is fulfilling the remainder of a term of a general election cycle. And so it's not a whole new general election. If they wrote the bill differently, that it didn't get this election to happen and that it was the appointment remained for the remainder until that general election, then, you know, yes, of course, everyone then votes in that general election, right, as should be. But because it is to fulfill the remainder of a term, it does make sense to me that it's only a candidate from the party where the previous individual in that general election had previously won in, that only candidates from that same party can serve it to fulfill the remainder of that term.
Okay. That ends all of my questions that I had for you, for our listeners. But do you have anything that we didn't touch upon today that you want to kind of to wrap us up with?
I just really appreciate the opportunity and want the voters to hear that I'm really passionate about good governance. Good governance matters, and that policy matters. I think I find it really comical that I've landed in politics, and it's more about the policy, and politics just happens to be the avenue to get there. So I want people to know that I'm a very hard worker, and I love to do research, and it's important to me to be able to make informed decisions. And so you may not agree with where I land on things, but you can know that I have listened to both sides, and that is really important for me as I serve, to be able to be informed that way. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. How can people find out more about you?
So I have a website. It's electlaurennelson.com. And you can, if you would like to have further conversation, you can contact me there. And Look forward to hearing from you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you.
And thank you for so much for putting your name on the ballot. We understand that is very hard. It's not easy to do. So thank you for running for elected office.
Thank you.
All right. In addition to Vote 411 and our interviews here on our Making Democracy Work podcast, the League is hosting candidate forums for voters to learn more about those school board candidates that are running for office on your November 4th ballot. So check out our event calendar on our website at lwvppr.org for a detailed list of scheduled candidate forums and our upcoming ballot issues forum. Military ballots were to be mailed around September 20th, with the rest of our ballots mailed by October 10th. Your ballot must be returned by 7 p.m. on Tuesday, November 4th. Remember, the League is here if you have any questions. Thank you again for listening today and for educating yourself before you vote. Until next time.